This is the day where I talk about my favorite topic, sex.
Why is it still a taboo?
Because you kind of see this thing and you're like, taboo. Why is no one saying nothing? Like, it's this pink elephant. We leave half of the community out of the conversation and wonder why we struggle. You realize a lot of the stuff that you struggle with is the shame that you kind of adopted as a child.
My name is Nozibele Kamgana Mayaba. I'm the host of Don't Hold Back, where we say it loud. This is a podcast in collaboration with DW, Jacaranda FM, and East Coast Radio. This is the day where I talk about my favorite topic, sex, S-E-X. Disclaimer, please, if you're 18 years and below, this is not for you. Go to school, ne? 18 years and above. I love talking about it, but I do realize that in some communities, it is a taboo. But the fact that I'm loud about it, I may be branded a certain way, but it's okay. We're here to debunk and talk all things sex and sexuality and how to discover yourself within yourself.
Yes!
Okay, let's talk about it. Women and sexuality. Yeah. Sex and sexuality. And today I have my favorite person in the entire world. No, and I'm not just saying that, okay? She is a gynecologist and also a sexologist. I asked her just before we started, by the way, did you go on a course to study sexologist or did you just take a few lessons online and now you're going around calling yourself a sexologist? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome my favorite Dr. Mbume.
Hey, hello, babe. Mama. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
It's always so good to see you.
Can I just have a disclaimer?
Yeah.
So that people can understand where now you've been trying to get me to get pregnant for the last, 2 years? So that you can deliver my second baby?
Yes.
I
need school fees for my daughter.
Ma'am, I need school fees for that baby.
We'll take care of the baby.
Okay.
Before we'll force you to come and see me every month for 9 months. Come on.
Sissy?
We've been trying to get this coffee going, so.
Sarah's economy is not. Sarah's economy is not kind. You're going to. You are not going to trick me into that.
Okay.
Listen, before we get into it, we have a tradition on the show to please bring your favorite snack without telling me the story behind the snack, because we'll get into that a little bit later.
Okay.
Tell me, what did you bring?
I brought this dessert. Naturally, I'm not a sweet tooth person.
Okay.
But every time I eat this, every time, even just the way that it looks.
Don't tell me.
It's giving.
Don't tell me. Guys, can I show you what the dessert is? There you go. Okay. I want the story behind it. The way she does that, I'm not sure actually I even want to know what the story behind it. But okay, we're going to get into that much later. Disclaimer, because I know this is a very sensitive topic, I don't want any under 18-year-olds, please go to school, study hard. You're going to come back to this one after you turn 18. Okay, right. Let's get into it. Sex, sexuality, women's health, I know you're very big on those.
Yeah.
Okay. And I did say earlier on, just even me mentioning sex and being comfortable, you know, talking about sex, it does brand me a certain way in certain communities. But hey, so when a nyani was telling a sex when?
Yeah.
Why, in your opinion, from your own research, from what you've seen on the field, why are we still, you know, why is it still a taboo to talk about sex? And especially as women, why do we have to be branded a certain way by you yay tanda sex?
And there's nothing wrong with the tanda sex.
Yes.
Look, we cannot divorce ourselves from our socio-cultural norms.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not. We live amongst people. We are not living in as an island.
Yeah.
I remember a time where there were no cell phones. Mm. And it would be like, and you would run and ubambuktingo.
Yeah.
And so there's always a change and an evolution in terms of the ideology of how we perceive certain things. I must say, we actually need to count ourselves really, really fortunate to be in an era where we can have conversations like this, where we can teach our children a little bit more openly, where we can give them a language to be able to express themselves. I think for the longest time, there was this misconception that just starting in our households, a misconception that if you teach your child, and I always say, Don't think of starting to teach your child about sex first. Teach them about their body.
Yeah.
You know, what is happening to your body? What are the changes? Because you kind of see this thing and you're like, Aibo, why is no one saying nothing? Like, it's this pink elephant. And unfortunately, when it comes to women, for the most part, we are taught out of fear.
Yeah.
You know, we are taught to, as soon as you get your period, close your legs, don't play with boys. Periods become this very taboo thing that like, even in families, you'll find the women just it's that time of the, and it's like, we leave half of the community out of the conversation and wonder why we struggle. And I mean, when you look at the number of people, even as we show up in our sexual spaces, you realize a lot of the stuff that you struggle with is the shame that you kind of adopted as a child.
Yeah.
So things are looking much better, but there's still a lot more work to do. We come from culture. We come from, I mean, Africa is deemed a very conservative continent.
Absolutely.
And so it'll take time. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes we get overexcited about trying to race with the Europeans, with the Americans. And I'm like, no. There are beautiful things about our culture that we just need to figure out, how do we move forward without losing ourselves?
I love what you said earlier on about, you know, it's about how we teach, you know, our children about sex. We don't have to start, you know, around this big concept, complex concept around sex. It's about teaching them how to, you know, what is it about their body that is developing, that is changing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but also think of, you know, when I wrote I Am Still Zuri, my children's book, where I was explaining what HIV is to kids.
Yes.
Because once again, it's that big, you know, complex issue. We don't talk about HIV. How do you explain what HIV is to a child?
Yeah.
And I kept on saying, guys, it's just about how do you approach?
Yeah.
Obviously, you're not going to be like, hey, you have HIV or your mom has HIV.
That
instills fear, right?
Yeah.
According to the level or the understanding that a child can grasp at that age, you break it down, you know, and simplify it in a manner that does not instill fear. So I absolutely love that. Tell them about their bodies, some of the changes that they're going to see.
And kids, you know, one thing that I'm always very fascinated by, children will give you plenty opportunities to have those conversations.
Yeah.
You know, they will ask questions like, I mean, as early as like 3-4 years, mommy, why does daddy bath alone and we can bath together? Mommy, why is my thing different to, you know, my cousin or something?
Yeah.
And the problem most of the time is it's actually not so much the kids, it's the meaning we've placed around it. So we use a lot of euphemism. I mean, I taught my daughter, it's a vagina, it's a vagina, it's a vagina, it's a vulva, it's a vagina. As early as 4 years of age, it's not a flower, it's not a petunia, it's not a, none of that nonsense, right?
Yeah.
And fair enough, I'm biased because I've been exposed to the information. I've been exposed to the research in terms of when you look at, for example, children who not end up per se, but children who are in abusive spaces, one of the big thing is them not being able to communicate, not having the language to say, oh, malumu's banbani, utatu's banbani, oh, mamu's banbani. You'll find a child fumbling around, also not even knowing whether it's okay. So if we teach our kids about the difference between a secret and something that is private, your privacy is important, but nothing should ever be a secret.
Wow.
You know, nobody should ever coerce you into saying it's a secret. But if we're not having these conversations, we're going to struggle.
And you know, the consequences of not having those conversations is now having adults that are struggling with their sexuality or expressing themselves, you know, in sex or just in general. And if I can be honest and very personal, I do not also have the greatest first experience.
What is a great first experience?
I mean, okay, first of all, I come from a very conservative family, right? We don't talk about it at all.
Okay.
It's all about ma ungalana makwenkwe.
Right.
And that's it, right? And I remember this one time we were at a wedding. To give you context, when you get married to a person that you are not dating.
Right.
You get, you know, pulled together by the pastor and say, hey, this guy wants to marry you. Go and pray. Come back. You agree or not. If you agree, then you're going to get married. And I remember there was one radical pastor, you know, that was marrying now this couple. And he said, listen here, you are here to have sex with your husband, not going and cleaning the windows. Yeah, listen, Dr. Mbwe, my mom was at the wedding, ne? She had...
turned red.
Listen, it was a conversation for like months. But how could he say that? You know, sex is natural. She didn't say sex. She said those things are natural. And for me, eventually, yeah, when I had my first experience, it wasn't natural.
No.
And to be quite transparent and very direct, I didn't even know how an erection looks like. Oh, and I didn't even know after it finished that he can't actually, he needs to take a while to get it up again. I felt to myself, honest.
Like, and you were sitting there thinking, how? Is that it?
That's what I'm saying. I was like, oh, no. I was like, oh, no, you can go again. It's like, no, that's not how it goes. I was like, oh. So it really impacts how women view sex.
Yeah.
One, there's the fact that most probably it's only to please men.
Right.
And not the woman. Please tell me more about, you know, some of the consequences of not having those conversations as now as an adult, yeah, and having to explore, you know, this complex, yeah, you know, topic.
Yeah. One of the big things I often say sex education, it is very paper thin.
Yep.
In terms of, and not just paper thin. I mean, there's plenty, if you go on the internet, there's plenty of actual content, sexual content. Mm. But in the way that it's palatable to the people that, yeah, are reading it. And also, like I said, I mean, I always make this example about culture will always most likely trump, yeah, you know, sort of like that intellectual education. There's another layer of emotional intelligence that has to come in the way that we handle this topic. My mother is a retired midwife now. Mm. So she had the content. Mm. And yet my mother, when I started my period, could not even get herself to go.
Yeah.
You know, we've never had a sex conversation, yeah, until I was literally on my way to go do sexology. Mm. And so we also have to be mindful of our cultural norms, yeah, our nuances, so that when we do talk about it, you know, you're asking about what are some of the consequences. Mm. You spoke about something really important. A lot of women, their first time experiences become monuments of pain and, yeah, hurt. And some of them to a point where they either don't want to be intimate,
yeah,
again. Some develop sexual dysfunctions, yeah, like things like vaginismus, mm-hmm, from that first encounter, yeah, if it didn't go well. And some just be like, okay, they said this thing is nice. Where's the nice?
Exactly.
You know, but if you haven't been taught properly about the fact that first time around, in fact, the first few times, it's going to be a little bit more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's why sometimes I'm so scared when I see how young our youth are starting off, because, yeah, there's so much more than just the physical that, yeah, happens in that space and that can impact you. So it has a very huge impact in terms of how you relate to sex, your sexual attitude,
yeah,
as an adult. You then get told when you are about to get married, okay, now go sing on chandeliers and please thy person.
And all this time you've been telling me
to close my legs.
Exactly.
Right. So even psychologically, our brains don't function like that. That's, yeah, why people who are either, you know, if we have habits or if we have addictions, it can be so difficult and it takes a whole lot more. It's called sort of like a brain wiring. Mm. The beautiful thing is our brain have what we call a neuroplasticity, in that we can change over, okay, time. When you change the idea, and I often say sex is not just sex, it's an idea of what you have.
Mm.
What do you have in mind? On that first time, what did you think would happen? Because, yeah, you would have had to have an idea for you to either be disappointed or be like, oh my gosh, that was actually better than what I expected, right? So it really does become important to have as many of these conversations so that,
okay,
the things that we grew up with, we can start to shed them.
Yes.
Oh, that thing, it's about him and not about me.
Mm.
Okay, that's not entirely true. You, yes, question those kind of things. And then you start moving in the right direction with, you know, credible information. One of the things that I remember questioning, when you look at the sexology, the way that we do what we call diagnostic. So there's a sort of like a we call it, now it's a DCM-5. We've got a DCM-5 that we use to diagnose sexual dysfunction.
Okay.
And one of the criteria, in fact, one of the big criteria for diagnosing somebody with a sexual dysfunction, one of the criteria is that the problem or the issue must bother the person who has it.
Okay.
So for example, if I'm not having an orgasm and it doesn't bother me at all, I don't have a dysfunction.
Okay.
And then I question and I say, so yes, we are learning this from a context of a European culture that is a little bit more liberal. Mm. If I am from South Africa, KZN, Gwanzimagwe, and all I've known all my life is that pleasure is for my husband or is for my partner, why the heck would I ever complain about it?
Yeah.
So of course I won't be bothered. Not because it's not something to be bothered about, but because I've never been taught that this thing is for me as well, that I should be bothered if I'm not getting an orgasm. I should be bothered if I'm experiencing pain during sex. I should be bothered. So a lot of women go on undiagnosed with sexual challenges and dysfunctions because there's almost this idea that pain is normal, being dry is normal, not enjoying is normal, 2-minute noodles are normal. Askies, guys.
No, listen. So what I'm getting to it is that there's a physical element of it, but it's more also psychological as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of things that you've been taught and you need to literally reprogram years and years of what you've been taught. By the way, talking about orgasms, is it true that like a lot of women have never experienced orgasm in their life?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But you were talking about the brain. I often throw this around that the biggest sex organ is actually the brain.
Okay.
Have you figured out how when you are relaxed, when you are in the mood, when your brain is not thinking about your boss's boss, fine, your kids, and you are in a good space, things go a little bit easier. When you are all over in your mind, you find that, I would say sex, orgasm and stress, they can't coexist. So it for me, it always starts with being aware of your body, because a lot of people, unfortunately, and because we're focusing on women, a lot of women, I mean, have never even taken a mirror to be like, eating zobono kutukwenza. Have you ever looked in the
mirror? No.
Oh, come on. You're busy giving this thing away like...
Something in the 10 days, Jungaban.
How do you look at your face?
Oh.
Right? Uitat, uijonge. And you're like, oh, kuna ma lips ngaphandle. Oh, these ones are hairy. And then you get inside those hairy lips and they're like, oh, these smaller lips, these ones don't have hair. Okay, I must be careful when I'm shaving. Okay. I must not irritate the inside ones. And then you're like, oh, what's that thing at the top? Oh, that must be the clitoris.
Aww.
And then you go and like, oh, okay. I mean, I've often asked, how many holes do we have? How many holes do we have, vulva, vagina?
Isn't it two? One, two.
How many holes? She's saying three.
You have three holes. Wait.
Seven.
Seven holes.
Seven holes.
Listen, I'll be very honest. I've never gravitated towards it because sometimes it does not look nice. I'm sorry.
So my response to that is I will never disavow a vagina ever in my life. In fact, until men wear bras on their balls.
Okay. I love this. Listen, okay.
That girl is gorgeous. And I mean, so those, because here's the thing. Who told you that it looks weird, ugly?
No, Hashem, to be honest, no one has told me it looks weird. It just looked very funny.
But you said you've never looked at it. You know, like on social media, angles. If you're just looking like that.
Okay.
You have to take a mirror, sit down, relax, make
it. Bust it all open.
Not, but like, why are you being so disrespectful to this girl?
I'm sorry.
This is the most important.
I take that. This is something I'm learning today.
Absolutely.
You don't talk about her.
So you have
like
to,
that.
You have to start with looking. You have to start. And the unlearning also comes from the fact that a lot of us were never taught to love our bodies.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember so clearly as a child, they used to call me Mfana Kababa. I was on bicycles, go-karts and stuff.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I, you know, go into puberty. Suddenly my hips are changing. My boobs are changing. The same, you know, uncles and abo putiba sendaweni who used to just see a child, you know, play sudden. Up and down. All of a sudden, they're like, yo, yaze yakhula le one, right? So it's, and then you kind of start thinking, is there something wrong with my body? You start wanting to hide. Then there is the weight gain sometimes. Sometimes we deal with things like acne. And a lot of the times as teenagers, we're not kind to one another.
Yeah.
So we're never taught to understand our bodies. Then you go in, I mean, you just have to look at, for example, what's happening in the media and you know, that whole concept. Oh, if you're wearing a short skirt, guys, my first bikini, my dad bought it for me.
Like, my dad is very progressive.
Oh, everyone. Yeah. But if society says the skimpier you're wearing as a woman, you're asking for something, you are sending a particular message. I have no issues with an idea of respecting your body to your value system, to the way that, to your preference. But I think we go way too far with policing women's bodies.
I love it. Now, this is going to be a nice transition. I want to play a quick game with you. Rapid fire questions. Don't think about it. The first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. Sex ed in schools or at home?
Definitely at home.
Okay. And I think I'm going to know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. dance it out or going out?
Definitely dance it out.
I know. You're a pro when it comes to these things. Okay. Pap smear or pelvic exam, which gets the most fear factor?
Pap smear.
The most... Okay. There's only one thing I want up there, and it is not the other thing that you put there. I don't like foreign things.
So you must find yourself a gynae who can treat you like, just for those few minutes, who can treat you a little bit like your person at home. And if your gynae or healthcare provider causes, like, makes you experience pain during a pap smear, they don't deserve your vagina. I'm sorry, I said it.
Thank
and
you.
And I'm sticking by it.
I love that. Last question. Most underrated female body organ?
Definitely clitoris.
Okay, nice transition. One time, I was speaking to a friend of mine who now has like a teenager. I think they're about 18, 19, right, at most 20. And we were talking about sex education. And one of the things she said to her daughter was, before you even experience it with someone else, experience it with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, oh my, excuse me? What was that? Experience it by yourself. And it's like, yeah, I told her to experiment with her own body.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, would you advise a parent that's watching this, that's still having difficulty, you know, having to have the sex talk or sex education at home? Would you advise something like that? But guys, allow abantwana to experience sex, you know, by themselves, or experience their body, rather, let me call it like that, on their own before they go out there and allow someone else to experience it.
Yeah. It's too restrictive for me to say that I would or would not advise.
Fair enough.
One of the things that becomes important as an educator is not to be prescriptive.
Perfect.
But rather to give people permission to be expressive of whoever they are. Yeah. So for example, you might find in a different culture, maybe a Muslim culture, ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
That kind of conversation is never going to happen. You might find in a Zulu culture, something like that is never going to happen. But what you want to have across board is this idea that parents, there is no barrier between parents and children in the ability to talk about things. And here's the reality as a parent of a 15-year-old, here's the reality. At some point, she's going to want to experiment, whether by herself, whether with a partner. The best thing that I can do for her is give her as much information, as much safe space, so that even when things are not going right, she knows that she can run to mom. She knows that she can run to her parents. I think the fear mongering attitude that often parents, you know, we kind of bury our heads under the sand. We assume that they will not learn from anybody. They will learn from somebody. And these days, they're learning younger. You know, they are trying to experiment with things a little bit younger. So do not ever be, as healthcare practitioners, do not be prescriptive, but be permissive.
I love that.
Based on the person's value system, because we are so different. And you also don't want to make somebody uncomfortable with the conversation they're about to have with the, you take a person from where they are.
Talking about uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
The other uncomfortable conversation is being able to have, you know, conversations with your partner. You know, what can we improve or what can we explore with? A lot of them do not like sex toys, for example.
Okay.
So for someone that is like, I would love to explore, I would love to talk to my partner, but hey, can you try this? But hey, my person is from back there, you know?
I think when it comes to sex, we overcomplicate it.
Okay.
We overcomplicate it. We always walk into the, you know, sort of like this sexual intimacy as if it's your pali exam and melan passing 100%. And if I inanga, if Andy call, you know, wet my shidis,
yes.
and if we don't get to orgasm, then it's a failure.
Mm.
We set ourselves up so much for failure. And part of it has to do with the fact that the problem, even from the beginning, when we meet one another with our partners, see, we got no makeup, no masks, and we are not willing to be like, dude, listen, I've never had sex before, so take it easy on me, right? If we were a bit more real and honest, and maybe let's say it takes time to get to that point. But I mean, I don't understand people who have been in long-term relationship who still complain about having bad sex. The first thing you need to understand is, how long have you been married for?
6 years.
6 years. Mm. How long have you guys been together for?
Almost 10.
All right, 10 years. So 10 years ago when you guys met, I'm sure, I mean, oh hot, konangogo.
Hello.
But one baby later, 10 years later, your body is not the same body back then.
Not.
Right? And the reality is, as long as we attach sexual intimacy success to how our body functions, to erections, to our body weight, to how we look. Oh no, we are dead underwater.
Okay.
There's only two things. In fact, there's only one thing that you need to have great sex. Show up and be great and amazing. That's
Hello.
It. Just show up as you are. And I think the biggest scare as well is we are often so scared that our partners will not receive all of who we are. So if in reality, when you ask people, so why are you having sex? Oh my gosh, the answers we get. And ultimately, at the core of it, we all want to be seen. We all want to connect. And we all want pleasure. Now, how we get there, can we just like...
I love that, love that. Final personal question to wrap up. If you could write a short letter, literally two lines, because I know you can talk. Two lines, short letter to your younger self about sex, self-worth, and womanhood. What would you say in two sentences?
I absolutely love and get why your mom was the way she was. And there's a lot of grace and kindness towards her. But I wish I had my older me, to my younger self to have these kind of conversations. And one of the things that I've often said to my daughter, the best gift I could ever give her is the gift of her discovering herself and her purpose at a very young age. Because when you get to know you, you can deal with the world.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think I thought this is my interpretation, is literally being able to give your daughter room where she can run to you about it. I think that's the most beautiful gift.
We live in such a society that is constantly trapping us in boxes, you know, and a lot of people just want to be able to like open the windows. Can I just breathe and be me? Hi, Nandi, every day, twice on Sunday. Hi, when we phone once a day, once a month. Okay, all right. Just let people be and receive people exactly where they are.
Thank you so much for that. Now let's get into the snack. I have a feeling I'm going to regret this, but it's okay. I'm so happy that we are not even sharing. I have my own, you have your own.
Of course.
Okay, explain.
Sex must not be shared. It's one of the...
Girl!
Everybody's got their own thing.
What did you bring? And please explain the story behind it.
So, like I said, naturally, I'm not really a sweet... Check it out when you open. Like, we need to get like a video of... What does this look like?
I don't know.
So... One of the reasons I absolutely love this.
This is pudding, hey.
It's dessert. It's a blueberry cheesecake like thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does it remind you of? What's the story behind it?
It's wet.
Lord have mercy.
It's got different, you know, especially the, so generally, and you know what? This is not even like sexual, but if you think of a vagina, at some point you have sort of like a, it looks a bit more like this. It's creamy-ish. And then during ovulation or during that nice nandivil, maybe not the color, but it turns into that sticky.
Okay.
And one of that wetness, that amashidi awet. So it's just, it's the texture for me. There's a texture to, I think it's the most interesting lady alive.
I have never met someone who would sexualize a pudding like that.
It's true though. And also, you know, sexual intimacy. Of course, when you kiss somebody and guys, learn your techniques, man.
Yes!
Like intimacy has such a, so it feels intimate.
Can I add fire, fuel to the fire?
Wait,
can I start that? Can I add fuel to the fire? And the fact that she tastes very nice.
Of course you must taste very nice. And you must know that about yourself, that you taste very nice.
Damn.
How many times do we kind of partner with people in the hope that validate me, get me to Polokwane, or...
So basically you must test yourself.
Of course, you must taste yourself and you must know. Go to Yabanamin.
Demnant.
Hello.
I'm very nice. Translation. Listen, I could not have had a more appropriate guest for this topic.
Thank you, ma'am.
A lot of takeaways as a parent.
Yeah.
Because there could come a time where, you know, I'm going to have the talk with Ulumi, right? Yeah. And we always joke about it at home where it's like, we are kwala sela when I can see there's a focus, a particular focus at a certain height, you know? When you're walking around, you know, just came out of the shower, walking around naked, and you can see, but his eyes are not moving from a certain part of your body. I even said to Jusko, I was like, please stop walking around naked because this child keeps on looking at you, okay? A certain part of you.
Yeah, he's like, that looks a lot like me.
Right? Right?
And there's nothing wrong with that.
So I definitely take a few notes as a parent, and I'm sure a lot of parents do as well. You don't wait for a big moment.
No.
It's all about the normal conversations. Absolutely. Or conversations that you normalize at home. Yeah. And also as a woman, you know, being comfortable with your sexuality and expressing yourself, not being afraid to express yourself. I'm going to take a mirror. I'm going to look at her.
Yes. And say, hello, girl.
Hello, baby. Ne? And all the lips.
Love on those lips, please.
We need to close this episode before it gets nasty. Okay? I want to thank you so much for coming through. We're going to continue this one offline.
Of course. Yes.
Because there are a few techniques I want you to teach me.
Wow.
Hello. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you learned something. This has been Don't Hold Back, where we say it loud, a podcast in collaboration with DW, Jacaranda FM and East Coast Radio. Please make sure that you catch this episode and many other episodes wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. There is a whole playlist on YouTube. Please make sure that you catch it there. Until next time, I've been your host, Nozibele Klamgana Mayaba. Bye. Don't Hold Back. Say it loud.